Let's return to Shantideva, the monk who reportedly only eats, sleeps, and defecates, and in between manages to write The Way of the Bodhisattva. Yesterday I talked about intention in the mind that seeks the way, how vital intention is, and how action and karma are rooted in intention. In light of this, today I would like to talk about vigilance or ethical discipline, one of the six paramitas. We have looked at how the root of suffering is our confused or deluded mind. So how do we work with this monkey mind? Shantideva spends a great deal of time telling us how to overcome our emotions, our confusions, habits, selfishness. He is saying, look, look, look. And if you don't believe you can stop doing the same things that have caused you grief your whole life, then he has some guidelines for you. And he knows you can do it. In chapter 5 of The Way of the Bodhisattva, Shantideva begins with, those who wish to keep a rule of life must guard their minds in perfect self-possession. Without this guard upon the mind, no discipline can ever be maintained. If we wish to wake up and help others to do the same, then we begin by working with our own mind. We must tame our unruly mind, and one of the primary ways we do this is through meditation. We tame the mind by bringing it back to the present, to what we are experiencing now. We do this over and over and over again, without judgment, and with compassion for ourselves. Mindfully, gently, repeatedly, we train in coming back. Shantideva refers to the three pure precepts as the three disciplines. Cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. Referring to them as the three disciplines is apt, as we need to discipline our minds and understand the place of this individual being in order to keep the three pure precepts. As long as we view ourselves as the central and most important person in our universe, we will have difficulty in seeing what it is good to do. How can we act and speak with kindness or reach out to others when our mind is crazed? Following the three pure precepts requires alertness and equanimity of mind. Cease from evil. Let us refrain from causing harm. The intention may be there, but in order to follow with skillful action, we must understand our own emotions and how they arise. Emotions that predictably make matters worse, rage, jealousy, fear, and addictive behavior, all arise from a tendency to grasp onto. Do only good. This is gathering virtue or awakening qualities in ourselves that bring us closer to others rather than separating us. I listened to a TED talk recently by Aslam Sekik, the first Muslim woman elected to Danish Parliament. In response to all the hate mail she was receiving, a friend suggested that rather than just deleting them, she begin a dialogue. Sekik began an exchange she now calls #Dialogue Coffee. She invites individuals who have sent hate mail or threatened her to meet for coffee. It is quite interesting that one of the things she has learned in the hundreds of dialogues is about her own delusions and hatred. The prejudice and distrust is not one-sided. Her aim is to bridge rather than widen the gap between herself and those who are different from her. Virtuous qualities bridge the gap. Kindness, generosity, appreciation, flexibility. They invite us to be curious and to listen. Do good for others. Benefit others. To Shantideva, the mind is both the source of all the trouble and of all the joy. In 8th century India, this was a revolutionary thought. The general prescription for taming the self at that time was through austerities and chanting. Shantideva refers to this several times in what follows. Shantideva continues, "Wandering where it will, the elephant of mind will bring us down to pains of deepest hell. No worldly beast, however wild, could bring upon us such calamities." Shantideva is saying that no worldly beast, no external thing, can bring us to such dire consequences as our own state of mind. This is a basic theme of Shantideva's writing. There is nothing on the outside that can make us suffer as much as our own mind. We augment and frequently create suffering with our mind. The good news is that we can do something about this. We can't do anything about many of the things that happen in our lives, but we can stop contributing to our suffering with the ideas, beliefs, prejudices, and limited perspective of our mind. When we begin a meditation practice, we tend to believe that if we sit long and often enough, we will become serene and find equanimity. What seems to happen is that we come to recognize the wildness of our own mind. This is why Great Master Dogen tells us to study the self. Through this study, we get to know the wild beast of self and how we harm ourselves and others. In No Time to Lose, Pema Chodron makes clear that there is good news and bad news. The bad news is that our mind is untamed and does the same damage as an elephant on a rampage. The good news is that true mind, Buddha mind, is a treasure and is inherently awake, inherently flexible and open. This is the true nature of mind, the mind of each of us. The wildness of our mind comes from greed, hatred, and delusion, born from fear, born from believing that there is a self we must protect above all else. We do this by trying to control the world around us. How effective has that been for you? Shantideva continues, "If with mindfulness rope, the elephant of the mind is tethered all around, our fears will come to nothing. Every virtue drops into our hands." When we meditate, we are cultivating our mind's inherent capacity to stay put. This is why when I am teaching people about meditation, I emphasize physically staying in your seat once you have sat down to meditate, particularly if you are meditating alone. There are so many things we can be distracted by. Physical restlessness, sounds, anger, distrust, hunger, boredom, discomfort. If we learn to physically and mentally stay through the discomfort when we are meditating, then we can learn to stay with some equanimity through the everyday discomforts of our lives. Being mindful or paying attention is one of the six paramitas. Mindfulness is like the rope that keeps the elephant from destroying everything. Shantideva's elephant bringing calamities down upon us relates to the wildness of the ox in the ox herding pictures, or to Manjushri's beast. Tame the wild beast, and then return to the world no longer whipped about by your delusions. Pema Chodron expresses it like this. This point is essential. Mindfulness tethers the mind to the present. Initially, this takes effort, but this effort is applied with a very light touch. It's like brushing your teeth. You brush, you get distracted, and you just naturally come back. No big deal. And so it goes with mindfulness training. Mind is present, mind wanders, mind comes back. No big deal. By gently returning to the present, gradually all our fears will come to nothing. Every virtue drop into our hands. When mind calms down, everything seems workable. The Buddha gives us a guide for responding in a way that every virtue drops into our hands. He gave his disciples 5 questions to ask before speaking. I have found these questions invaluable in taming my mind and invaluable in seeing what it is good to do. Do I speak at the right time or not? Do I speak the truth or not? Do I speak gently or not? Do I speak helpful words or not? Do I speak with good intention or not? According to these 5 conditions, we speak only when it is the right time and place, when it is true, when it is kind, when it is beneficial or helpful, my personal favorite, and when we speak with goodwill. If our words do not meet each of these 5 conditions, then it is time to be silent. Simple, right? Things are going to get very quiet. Shantideva goes on. Tigers, lions, elephants and bears, snakes and every hostile beast, those who guard the prisoners in hell, all ghosts and ghouls and every evil phantom, by simple binding of this mind alone, all these things are likewise bound. By simple taming of this mind alone, all these things are likewise tamed. For all anxiety and fear, all sufferings in boundless measure, their source and wellspring is the mind itself. Thus the Truthful One has said. And a bit later, Shantideva continues, thus throughout the triple world, there is no greater bane than mind itself. Who can we blame? Only ourselves and our rampaging minds. Again, the paramitas cannot liberate us until we work with our minds. This is because the paramitas and letting go of self-clinging are related. They walk hand in hand. Our actions either undercut our attachments or strengthen them. They bring us into the present or distract us. Whenever any action takes us beyond self-absorption, it becomes a paramita. This can only occur when we are willing to open our minds. So we seek a mind without bias or preconceptions. That's a tall order. How do we take our strong feelings and opinions and respond with virtue, with an open mind? Where does awakened mind happen? Only where life becomes bigger than me. Only through interaction with each other. Shantideva goes on to extol the virtues of disciplining the mind. The hostile multitudes are vast as space. What chance is there that all should be subdued? Let but this angry mind be overthrown, and every foe is then and there destroyed. Likewise, we can never take and turn aside the outer course of things, but only seize and discipline the mind itself. And what is there remaining to be curbed? Our state of mind and our perceptions are linked. Without anger, there is no enemy. Rather than trying to change what happens in the world, we might put that energy into disciplining our mind. Shantideva continues, a clear intent can fructify and bring us birth in lofty Brahma's realm. The acts of body and of speech are less. They do not generate a like result. Recitations and austerities, long though they may prove to be, if practiced with distracted mind, are futile. So the knower of the truth has said. Shantideva restates what he has said earlier. The mind and intention are the ground. Everything else follows. Then he is having a bit of fun with us. Recitations and austerities, long though they may prove to be. And finally, he says, all who fail to know and penetrate the secret of the mind, the Dharma's peak, although they wish for joy and sorrow's end, will wander uselessly in misery. Taming the mind comes first and is a prerequisite for following the mind that seeks the way. Shantideva underlines what has gone before. Mind, a wild and rampant elephant, I'll tether to that sturdy post, which is reflection on the teaching, and I shall narrowly stand guard that it might never slip its bonds and flee. And how do we tame the beast? Remember the teaching. Here Shantideva begins a beautiful litany on how to free ourselves from worldly conditions and from the temptations to break the precepts by remaining like a log. When the urge arises in the mind to feelings of desire or wrathful hate, do not act, be silent, do not speak, and like a log of wood be sure to stay. When the mind is wild with mockery and filled with pride and haughty arrogance, and when you want to show the hidden faults of others, to bring up old dissensions or to act deceitfully, and when you want to fish for praise or criticize and spoil another's name or use harsh language, sparring for a fight, it's then that like a log you should remain. Does this sound familiar to you? Shantideva seems to be referring to ways we break the precepts. These urges are paraded in front of us every day, in our mind, in our actions, in our conversations with others. If we do not wish to break the precepts, like a log, we should remain. And Shantideva goes on, and when you yearn for wealth, attention, fame, a circle of admirers serving you, and when you look for honors, recognition, it's then that like a log you should remain. And when you want to do another down and cultivate advantage for yourself, and when the wish to gossip comes to you, it's then that like a log you should remain. Impatience, faint-heartedness, and likewise haughty speech and insolence, attachment to your side, when these arise, it's then like a log you should remain. Examine thus yourself from every side. Note harmful thoughts and every futile striving. Thus it is that heroes in the bodhisattva path apply the remedies to keep a steady mind. In other words, attachment to the eight worldly conditions, praise and blame, pleasure and pain, fame and disgrace, gain and loss, can easily catch us and make it a great challenge to remain like a log. Shantideva is talking about the tug, the urge, the things that hook us. And he is telling us how to interrupt the momentum. We need to see and acknowledge what hooks us and do something different from our habitual response. Anything different that doesn't cause harm. I find that changing my physical environment is a great help. Walk into another room. Get up and do 3 minutes of walking meditation. Take refuge in the three treasures. Excuse yourself and go into the bathroom. And when you catch yourself getting hooked, don't use it as ammunition against yourself. Here I go again. Just bow. Bow to the circumstances. Bow to the hook. Bow to your response. Bow. Remaining like a log is based on refraining, not repressing. Like a chalanatha, we are remaining on our seat with determination and presence of mind. Don't push away. Acknowledge what is happening, and your thoughts have a chance to calm down. Stay, 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 and things will move. This is being awake. Let's go back to attachment and the eight worldly conditions for a minute. In the end, it is attachment that hooks us, that keeps us from remaining like a log. There are three main attachments that support us when we are self-absorbed and our reactions are fear-based. Attachment to our possessions, attachment to our bodies, and attachment to our good fortune, or our positive qualities, our merit. When Shantideva speaks of the emptiness of our intrinsic nature, there is no there there. He shows us that attachment itself is empty. He says, when all things are empty in this way, what can be received, what taken away? Who can be honored or humiliated by whom? From what can there be happiness or misery? What can be liked and what loathed? What craving can there be? These attachments tug at us and keep us from following our intention and the mind that seeks the way. Let me read Shantideva again. When all things are empty in this way, what can be received, what taken away? That is, nothing stands against being generous. Who can be honored or humiliated by whom? That is, nothing stands against being kind. From what can there be happiness or misery? What can be liked and what loathed? That is, sure, we have preferences, but the opposites have little grip on us. What craving can there be? That is, nothing is given and nothing is taken away. Let's end again with Shantideva. And now, as long as space endures, as long as there are beings to be found, may I continue likewise to remain to drive away the sorrows of the world. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha.